long was that video? All right, in just a few minutes, we will have a race car driver. Dale Jarrett will join us. A really good one, by the way.
Hall of Famer.
Looks like Hall of Famer, no question. It looks like Nashville SC is on their way to Orlando, and that is very good news. Also, a news story today, the Washington Redskins are doing an internal, evaluation of their nickname. It looks like there really could be more momentum than ever to perhaps changing their nickname. So that could be coming down the pike. Also,
Adam Schefter reporting that it's more likely than not they're going to change it.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I think we would all interpret it that way. And obviously, he's been talking to people. And finally, Bob McKenzie this morning coming out with more details. Now, we're still waiting for them to hammer out the last details of the agreement, but he continues to insist that the NHL and the NHL Players Association are very close on announcing a new agreement, which not only will set the table for this year, but have the CBA ratified and extended. But here is something that we had not heard until this morning, that he's actually got a tentative timeline coming up. And that would be, once they get everything ratified, it would now be July 13th would be the target date to start training camp. So a couple of days after the July 10th, which is what the initial date that was thrown out there for a good while. It went from July 1st to July 10th pretty quick, and then it's been July 10th for a while. Now it looks like July 13th. And then around July 26th, the teams would head to the hub cities with Edmonton and Toronto being those hub cities. Nashville would go to Edmonton, and they would have their series against the Coyotes start, the qualifying series, around August 1st is the target for that. And then those games would take place. Remember, there would be several series going on. There were, 16 teams playing in that. Around August 10th would be the end of that, and they would then hold the draft lottery. The losers, the eight losers of those series will be eligible for the lottery, and one of them will get the top pick because of the bizarre nature of how the ping pong balls fell, right? The team E got a spot at the top, so it will not be the Red Wings. It will not be the Senators. It will be one of the eight losers in that qualifying round. So that would be the consolation prize for somebody. And then the playoffs would begin after that. Early October is when they would target crowning the Stanley Cup winner. Of course, there's some flexibility in there. After that, you would hold the draft. And then, get this, the day after Halloween is when the new league year would start, which would include a free agent frenzy. Now, when we say free agent frenzy, I guess we'll have to look at what the salary cap is and what is the market. And at that point, what does it look like for having fans in the stands? All of that is TBD. But that is the plan right now, according to Bob McKenzie from TSN.
Yeah, and it's ever-changing, but it's nice to actually be able to, even though they're tentative, put some dates with everything and kind of get a timetable of how this season is going to go. Crowning a Stanley Cup champion in October, which is when the season usually begins, so that'll be crazy. November 1st being free agent frenzy. And if it is, in fact, on November 1, that's also the day the Titans take on the Bengals or are scheduled to. So it's going to be a wild few months if everything goes as planned. And I know we keep using the word if, and it's unfortunate we have to, but with things changing on a daily basis with this virus, that's just kind of where we're at. So Bob McKenzie has done a tremendous job with TSN following this story. Hopefully over the weekend, as we celebrate Independence Day here in America, they get it all figured out and there's some resolution. I know that from the owner's side, they get on a conference call and it'll be, pretty much good to go with the players. They have to go through the voting process and ratifying that. So it takes a little more time. We'll get to that when we get to it, and hopefully that happens here in the next few days. So I know that we're all looking forward to getting some hockey underway. And as you mentioned, Nashville SC headed down to Orlando. That's very good news as well, Willie. I know we're about, yep. I think we have him. So
yeah,
it's time to talk a little racing. Let's say hello to the 1999 Cup Series champion and Hall of Famer, Dale Jarrett of NBC Sports. DJ, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today?
You know, we're hanging in there, and I asked that question of how you're doing because I know a few weeks ago you announced you did test positive for COVID-19. Glad to hear you're doing well.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have a very mild case of it. Actually, a little shocked because I really didn't have much in the way of symptoms or anything, a slight cough, and but got through that period, and everything's going well. I feel really good and excited to be here in Indianapolis this weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. It's a doubleheader weekend, not only with NASCAR continuing their schedule, the Brickyard 400, July 4th weekend, the first time that it's been there. Usually we're talking about Daytona and the Firecracker, but with the schedule changing, and this was already a change going to the Brickyard, but in the IndyCar series, they're going to run on the road course along with the Xfinity series on Saturday. Going to be fun having the doubleheader this weekend.
Oh, what a historic weekend for motorsports. Just incredible. You know, it was back in 1994 that we brought stock cars and NASCAR racing here to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the first time. And a lot has happened since then. But this has been talked about for a long time, that having an IndyCar, NASCAR race weekend at the same venue. And it's just incredible. The downside of it is there's going to be no fans here to enjoy it. So I'm out here today, and it's just a little bit strange to be around here and no fans wandering around and looking to get autographs and things like that. But as far as the racing goes, just incredible. I've never seen cars on the road course. So I've been taking this morning and this afternoon. The Indy cars just finished their first practice about 30 minutes ago, and the Xfinity cars now are on this road course for the very first time. And so it's going to be interesting to watch that tomorrow afternoon. Of course, you can get all of that on NBC, and should be just exciting racing. And then getting to Sunday for the Cup race and the Brickyard 400, which is this is just one of my favorite places and races that we have on the schedule.
Well, you won there. You're a Brickyard 400 champion, and you were actually, I believe, the first to kiss the bricks. If I'm not mistaken, that you started that tradition. That's got to be cool to have that distinction.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, when Todd Parrott, who was my crew chief for a lot of years, and we were sitting around talking about doing something different, if we were fortunate enough to come here and win, and that was our first year with the 88 car in 1996, we battled our teammate Ernie Irvin right down to the very end and got the win. And so everybody, we were having so much fun in Victory Lane, I kind of forgot what we were going to do. And Todd's like, hey, you remember what we talked about? We told no one else about this. And so we led everybody out to the start-finish line where it's the Yard of Bricks, and gave them a little kiss, and having no idea that it would become a tradition for every winner here at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So it's kind of cool to see that, and you know, it always brings up great memories as to 1996 and when it all took place.
So obviously during this time, Dale Jarrett with us from NBC Sports, we've had a lot of time to watch old races or old sporting events. You know, I just turned 33, so there are some things that from the early 90s that I watched, but I don't necessarily remember because I was so young. So I've had a lot of fun going back and watching old races. I can remember that first Brickyard 400 in 94 that Jeff Gordon ends up winning, but just how big of a deal it was for stock cars to, however you want to put it, invade or start running the Indy Motor Speedway that has such a rich history with IndyCar and open wheel. But what was it? You won in 96, as you said, but what was it like, though, to be there that day, to just everything leading up to it and finally turning them loose and going racing?
Yeah, you know, that day and those few days of obviously leading up with practice and qualifying and then getting ready for race day, leading up to that, it was like that we had gone into another time. It was so magical to, you know, a lot had been said about, well, were race fans going to show up? Were we going to be accepted here? And things couldn't have been better from a standpoint of being welcomed here. And then the crowd that showed up was just incredible. You know, it was more fans than we'd ever seen at a NASCAR race. And it just continued to grow each year. But that first year, it was like, oh, my gosh. You'd come here and we had tested. we had practiced and everything leading up to the race, and yet there would be 30,000 fans out here watching the practice sessions and then the qualifying. But then on race day, that was the most amazing thing, to see these stands fill up and how enclosed it made you feel as a driver coming down this long front straightaway, because it just seemed that everything got a lot more narrow than what it had been previously. You still were running the same group, but just seeing all of those people, that mass of people here and supporting this. So it was an incredible day. My day didn't end the way that I wanted, even though we ran really well, but we got caught up in an accident. But I knew that this was going to be a place that I was going to want to do well at. And fortunately, starting in 95, I had a lot of good runs, finished third that year and then won in 96. So just an incredible feeling of being here and being a part of that history. And, you know, that's why I say this weekend is unfortunate, because you could bring all motorsports fans together if they were allowed here from the IndyCar side and from the NASCAR side. And, you know, it's racing, and incredible racing here at the world's arguably most famous speedway in the world.
Dale Jarrett is with us. He'll be on the NBC coverage alongside Mike Tirico, which will be really cool, as the IndyCar Series will run the road course tomorrow at 11 o'clock Central, the Xfinity Series at 2 o'clock Central, and then the Cup guys on the Oval at 3 o'clock on Sunday for the Brickyard 400. We've seen an influx of road course races on the NASCAR schedule, whether it's like at Indy of running the road course there, or the Roval at Charlotte, trying to add some as they continue to make the schedule a little more diverse. Did you like running road courses in your career?
You know, I enjoyed the challenge. I won't try to pretend that I was an excellent road racer, but I became better and learned a lot about it. I talked to a lot of the guys that were good road racers and got a lot of good information from that. But I found it such a different challenge than what we did most other weeks. And at the time, during when I raced, we basically raced two. We ran Sonoma in June, basically, and then in August we would run Watkins Glen. And they were completely different venues and how you had to drive and attack the track. So you had to have different skills for each one. But you saw guys that didn't bother you. You talk about Rusty Wallace and Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart. You know, they were really good at both of those, and you knew who you had to outrun. But it was so much fun. But it has caught on so much in NASCAR now. The fans just love this type of racing because, you know, they're seeing a lot more of like short track racing, which is what they really love. I'm not taking anything away from the 2.5 mile track here or the 1.5 mile tracks at other places. But when you put them in tight confines, especially stock cars, then a lot of things are going to happen. And the fans have really taken a liking to the road courses. The Xfinity guys run, you know, 4 to 5 a year now. And it's really interesting to watch them navigate and maneuver. But, again, I found it a real challenge and fun. And these Xfinity drivers now today, coming here for the first time and seeing this road course, you know, you might have walked around and saw where it was, but getting out there at speed is a whole different matter. So it's going to be a fun weekend. You brought up Mike Tirico. I talked about how special the whole weekend is. Well, that adds another special part of it for me to work with Mike Tirico here this weekend with these races. I mean, every big sporting event that has happened over the years, Mike Tirico, you see him there, and he's so knowledgeable about everything. So I'm really looking forward to that.
You bring up, or we bring up the schedule and how the schedule has changed because of COVID-19, but also NASCAR made an effort to look at, you know, it's time to change things up. The championship race moving from Homestead to Phoenix this year, doing the doubleheader weekend with Pocono, those were all scheduled. But as we've learned through COVID-19, midweek races, big fan, let's go ahead and keep those on the schedule because that would be a lot of fun. But then it's announced that NASCAR will be coming to our city in Nashville at the Nashville Super Speedway. Now, I would assume at some point in your career you raced out at the fairgrounds, correct?
Yes, correct, yeah. Yes.
Obviously, we would all love to see NASCAR at the fairgrounds as well, and I know that that's still on the table and that could still happen, but how important is it to not only have the awards banquet here but racing in Nashville because of the rich history of NASCAR?
Yeah, that's one of those things that seems to me to be just a natural fit, and you've got a really good racetrack to run races on, and you've got a great city right there that can host the fans. It gives them great opportunities to do so many more things around a race weekend there. I think it's just a perfect match, and getting back there, I think it's very important to the sport and doing things differently. As you pointed out, we're changing things up in 2020. They're going to be different in 2021. I think hopefully, Phoenix is a great place to host the championship race, but I think moving it to other racetracks in other cities is something that we will probably see in the future. And I think that, as you pointed out, having races midweek, this is very doable. And having practice hasn't diminished the racing at all. Matter of fact, it might have enhanced it a little bit. So I think there's a lot more opportunities out there. But coming back to Nashville, which was such a huge part of the success of the sport growing to a high level to begin with, is a great natural fit. And everyone in the sport's looking forward to that.
Something that I wanted to bring up with you, because you have a unique perspective on this. Your father, of course, Ned Jarrett, raced, and then you came into the sport had a Hall of Fame career in your own right. But just how difficult that is, if you're a Dale Jarrett, a Dale Jr., a Chase Elliott that's experiencing that now, to be that next generation driver, to know the things that your father accomplished and try and live up to that, so to speak.
Yeah, almost impossible. I mean, you think about Kyle Petty trying to be as successful as Richard Petty, his dad. I mean, he won 200 races and 7 championships. Dale Jr., as you pointed out, he won 7 championships and was, what the sport was built on, and the fans loved it. You either loved him or hated him because of the way that he performed with that. Chase Elliott is finding the same things and trying to live up to what his dad did, which is, again, nearly impossible because so many things change. And the thing that I always looked at with my career was I never envisioned trying to win 50 races like my dad. I was going to win as many as I possibly could, but he won 2 championships in the Cup Series and those 50 races. And to try to make a comparison is just really unfair to all of us that were in that position. But you also, deep down inside, used it as a motivating factor that, hey, this has been put out there for me. I don't have to look at, and from a Jarrett standpoint, I didn't have to look at Richard Petty or what Dale Earnhardt did. All I had to do was look within my household that my dad achieved this. And so those opportunities are there to go out and be the best that I could. And fortunately, things worked out really well for me, as they have for the other guys. So, yeah, it's an unfair comparison, if you will, in trying to achieve those things. But I think it can, if you use it properly, it's a compliment and a motivating factor too.
Did you use any time while of course we were all quarantining during this to watch some old races? I one we'll always remember involving you, the Dale and Dale Show with your dad on the call, mm-hmm. and you win the Daytona 500. I watched that entire race and that finish, and even as an Earnhardt fan, I found myself pulling for that 18 car of Joe Gibbs Racing at the time. But did you find yourself going back and watching some old races?
Oh, absolutely. It was great to have something like that out there for us to look at, look back on where the sport was at that time, how different the cars looked, how the racing was actually, from a driver's perspective, different at times and at certain racetracks too, as to what you did and how you found your way around to be successful. So it was so interesting just to see all of that and kind of relive something, because when you're in the middle of it, I mean, during my career, seldom did I ever go back and watch a race. It didn't matter, obviously the 93 Daytona 500, I saw the end of that quite a few times just in talking about it, because my dad was there doing the announcing, and they gave him the last lap to talk about as I was battling Dale Earnhardt there. And so, you might see that, but other races, you just wouldn't go back and watch. And so I found myself watching these, and some of them, were fun to watch because I went on to win the race. Others were, what people like Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt and Rusty Wallace, what they did to win those races. And, some of them I was in contention for the win, and others I wasn't, but just to see how they went about things. So it was just so interesting, because that was a time we saw so many races from a time that I feel like was the best time to be in the sport. And I was fortunate to be there and to see those races and see the fans, the stands filled with fans was just incredible to watch.
Dale, as we let you go, you know, one thing that I get asked a lot, why are you such a racing fan? Outside of I love seeing door-to-door at, you know, 180 miles an hour and close finishes, but the family aspect of NASCAR, and you mentioned that, you know, giving your dad the last lap to call his son home is one of those moments we'll always remember. Darrell Waltrip calling Mikey Waltrip for the Daytona 500 is one. But we've seen family really make a difference as of late. Bubba Wallace has been shown just how much this sport rallies around him and loves him no matter what. And I think that has been really cool to see the sport come together so much lately.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, this year in particular, you can look back on moments that make you really proud to be a part of this sport. And a lot of those are those family moments. And it's always been a lot closer knit family than what people might realize. We talk about that, but then we go out and race hard on Saturday night or Sunday, and that's what you do. But that doesn't take away from the fact that you know, we care about our competitors and the people that we're around. And certainly, you know, you like certain ones better than others, but that's just human nature and that's competition. But what I've seen this year in a number of different respects, you know, first off of making this all work around COVID and the restrictions that you have, everybody doing their job and doing their part, NASCAR putting all of this together to put competition back there for the fans to watch. Just on TV right now for the most part, but they'll be back hopefully very soon. And then the other side of it was to rally around and with Bubba and to see that really caring aspect and not just, you know, the guy's not just saying this, but out there trying to make a difference in our world. And we're in a time right now that people want to make a difference and do the right things. And we're seeing that in the NASCAR community. I'm really proud to be a part of it.
Well, Dale, very well said. It's good to talk to you. Appreciate you taking the time. We'll enjoy your coverage alongside Mike Tirico all weekend with the IndyCar, with NASCAR, of course, with it all concluding Sunday at 3 o'clock with the Brickyard 400. Thanks so much for coming on with us. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And looking forward to the weekend here with NBC and everybody here at Indy. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend.
You too. Dale Jarrett, the 1999 Cup Series champion, the Hall of Famer, the 96 Brickyard 400 winner, and multiple-time Daytona 500 winner. And, Willie, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun to be a part of that and to have Dale Jarrett on the show. We'll react to some of that trivia coming up at 1 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.